Today we're going to finish our discussion of basar b'chalav, milk and meat in kosher home. In the first half we had spoken about certain food items, such as the prohibition against having dairy bread, and what to do with imitation items like soy cheese and other things that appear to be dairy or meat but are really not. And then we spoke about separating milk and meat in the kitchen, different things relating to that, and different parts of the kitchen, the ovens and microwaves and spices and different things like that. And then lastly, we had spoken about if a person wants to kosher back and forth between milk and meat for different dishes they have in the kitchen. Now we're going to move on to one of the more famous rules about milk and meat, and that is that after a person eats meat, the rule is that they need to wait 6 hours before they eat any dairy products. That is, if they eat meat or poultry, they have to wait 6 hours. There are some families that have a custom to wait only 1 hour or 3 hours, or other people do a little more than 5 hours or 5.5 hours. So if a person has that kind of a custom, then yes, they should follow that. But everybody else should be waiting full 6 hours. Excuse me. And the opposite is that if a person eats dairy products, they do not need to wait 6 hours. However, they do need to do something else, which is if they're going to be eating meat within about an hour after they ate the dairy, then they need to eat something prior, drink something prior, and check or wash their hands to make sure there's no residue on them. The point of all those ideas is to make sure there's nothing left in the person's mouth or on their hands. So, for example, on Shavuos, coming up soon, on Shavuos, many people have a minhag that on Shavuos they have meat, milk, and meat at the same meal. They'll have a two-part meal. And therefore, what those people need to do is they need to eat the milk part of the meal. If they finish the milk part of the meal, they need to eat something parv, drink something parv, and, you know, to rinse out their mouth, and to check their hands or wash them. So that's the general rule about waiting 6 hours between milk and meat, after eating meat before eating milk, and the lesser requirement after eating milk before eating meat. Now, what happens if a person, they made a food that had meat in it, but they only ate the parv part of that dish? For example, they made chont, and the chont has meat inside of it, but the person only ate potato from that chont. They didn't eat any of the meat, they just ate the potato part of it. So the Shulchan Aruch, which is what Sephardim do, is the Shulchan Aruch says that the person does not have to wait for 6 hours after eating, after eating that meat, if eating that potato, because he didn't eat anything for 6 hours. But the Ramah, which is the Ashkenazi custom, says that you should wait. So you have to wait the full 6 hours, even though you only ate the potato from the chont and not the actual chont itself. And that rule applies even if the thing was cooked not with meat, but with animal fat. And the same thing also applies if it was cooked with chicken also. Even though chicken is not as stringent as meat is, the laws are not that. As far as basar b'chalav, but not as strict. Even so, you have to wait after eating something cooked with chicken also. Now, all of that assumes that the food was actually meat or chicken fat or something like that in the pot cooking together. If, however, the person took a pot that was just a fleshig pot and into that, and they cooked a vegetable soup in that fleshig pot, then they do not have to wait 6 hours after eating that food. That is to say, they wouldn't eat that food together with milchiks, but they don't have to wait 6 hours after eat that food before they go and eat milchiks. Now, the shach sticks in that this is even true even if the pot wasn't perfectly clean, and even if the pot had enough left in it that there was, it wouldn't be batal. I mean, there was a nice amount of meat, of residue in the pot. Even so, they do not have to wait 6 hours before they eat dairy afterwards. So, I guess in theory, this is not such a common case, but in theory, if someone cooked the chicken soup, and dumped out the chicken soup, and without washing out the pot, went right into it and just cooked vegetable soup right afterwards, after eating that vegetable soup, they wouldn't have to wait 6 hours. So that's not such a common case. Most people wouldn't do that. But if such a thing happens, for sure people cook in clean fleshig pots, and if you cook in a clean fleshig pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours for eating that food. After eating that food, you don't have to wait 6 hours to eat that. So the most common example we have of that is items that you buy in the store that have a hechsher on them, and the hechsher says on it, DE. So not DRE, they're DE, which stands for dairy equipment, like for let's say CRC, and next to our CRC logo will be the letters DE next to it, or the OKDE, something like that. And what that means is the ingredients used in that to make that product are completely part of. Everything's part, but it runs on the same equipment that is used for dairy items, and they don't clean the equipment well in between them. They don't do something that qualifies as a kosher in between, so it's made on dairy equipment. So you shouldn't eat that thing with that food with meat. But you could eat it right after eating meat. It's not considered to be milchig, so to speak. Just like we said before, the opposite case as far as becoming flatulous. It is worth pointing out in this situation. We asked Rabbi Friedman from Bezdin what he thought about what happens if you have French fries made in a fast food meat restaurant that fries chicken and meat in their fryer. And that oil just sits there, and sitting in the fryer is lots of grease from the old chicken, and probably pieces of chicken are still floating around in there, and then somebody makes French fries in there, and he said that your person needs to wait 6 hours after eating those French fries. It's like eating a meat soup, in which case you have to wait 6 hours, rather than eating something made in a meat pot. So you have to wait 6 hours for that. One last point in this is that Rabbi Kibager says that even though an onion has a special halacha, and that when you cut an onion with something, it gets a special status, if you cut an onion with a fleshy knife, that onion shouldn't be eaten with milk, unless you shouldn't put that onto your pizza, but you could eat, after you eat that onion, you don't have to wait 6 hours before you eat milk, and the minig is to be makel the other way also, that if you cut an onion with a milchig knife, you could eat that even after you just ate fleshig. You can't eat it with meat, but you can eat it right after fleshig. There is a prima gobim in Or Chaim who says that maybe you should be machmir on that, but the minig is not to be machmir on that. So something cut with an onion, if you cut an onion with milchigs or fleshigs, it shouldn't be eaten with the other type, but you don't have to wait 6 hours between that and the other type. Okay. There is one exception to this. It's one of the rules we said before, and I had said at the beginning that after you eat milchigs, you don't have to wait before you eat fleshigs. You don't have to wait 6 hours before you eat fleshigs. You have to check your hands, etc. But one of the exceptions is that the Ramah says that if a person eats something that he calls hard cheese, then you have to wait 6 hours. Now, hard cheese, in this case, doesn't mean hard cheese like American cheese, which is harder than like soft cheese, like cream cheese. In this case, hard cheese means, the Shach says what that means is it's a cheese that's aged more than 6 months. When you age your cheese, it gets harder and harder, to the point that some of these cheeses can even be grated. They're so hard. So if it waits, if it ages for 6 months or longer, then that's considered a hard cheese. And that, the person who eats that food, it has the same status as eating meat. It has a strong taste. It leaves residue in your mouth, and therefore, you have to wait 6 hours after you eat that before you eat meat. The most common application that we have of that is for something called Parmesan cheese. Parmesan cheese, by law, is something that cheese that has to age for 10 months if you make real Parmesan cheese. And if a person eats Parmesan cheese, they need to wait 6 hours before they eat meat. There are other cheeses that come like that. Occasionally, you'll pick up a cheese and it'll say aged cheddar, and it'll say aged for this many months. But the most common cheese is that we see is Parmesan. And just a side note, sort of, is that once a cheese is finished, and sometimes it's even cooked at the end, even if it's not cooked, but once it's put into the packaging, it stops aging in the traditional sense. There may be minuscule amounts of aging going on, on a microscopic level, but basically the aging is over, and therefore once it's packaged, you don't say, oh, it's been sitting in the package for 6 months, now it's a 6 months old cheese, because the criteria really is it a hard cheese? Take on those characteristics of a hard cheese, and the aging that goes on in the package is so tiny that does not get any addition, doesn't pick up any more of those qualities, so that doesn't count. So really, the only ones are the ones that are aged, so to speak, for real, for at least 6 months. Now, there's a question in the Poskim. What happens if you have a hard cheese, and let's say like a Parmesan, and you mix it into another food? There's just a small amount of it in another food, or you melted it onto another food. And the examples of those would be, you make a Caesar salad that has in it Parmesan cheese, or you make eggplant Parmesan, and you made it with real Parmesan cheese. Not always done that way, but you make it with real Parmesan cheese, so there it's melted. So there's a shaila about that. Many people are makel when the cheese was melted, into the food, which doesn't have its hardness and its strong taste to it. And most people are machmir in the first case where it was just blended in, but it's still actual pieces of cheese floating around in there. Okay. Now let's move on to another part of basar b'chalav, not your sort of not in the kitchen itself, or not directly in the kitchen itself, and that is like this. The Torah says three times you're not allowed to eat milk and meat together. The first one is, one of them is to tell you that you're not allowed to cook them together. The second is that you're not allowed to eat them. And the third is that you're not allowed to have any benefit from basar b'chalav that was cooked together. Milk and meat that were cooked together, you're not allowed to have any benefit from them. And that means is that although your pets are not required to keep kosher, they're not Jewish, they don't have to keep kosher, but if you feed food to your pet, then you, the owner, are considered to be having benefit from that food, and therefore, for certain types of foods, you're not allowed to feed it to the animal, not because the animal can't eat it, but because if you feed it to him, you're having hanah from that, you're having benefit and, well, pleasure from it, and therefore, it's usher for you to do that. And those include what we just mentioned, basar b'chalav. If you have milk and meat, in a certain way, we'll talk about more detail in one second, but milk and meat is one example of something that's usher to have enough from and you can't feed it to your pets. Another one is chametz, starting from Erev Pesach through the whole Pesach, chametz is usher b'hana, and therefore you can't feed chametz to your pets on Pesach. And most opinions hold that wine or grape juice that's not kosher, stam yayin, is also usher b'hana. You wouldn't be allowed to have hana from it, and you couldn't have any benefit from it. You couldn't do anything that you have pleasure. I don't know if you treat that to your pets, but you can have other forms of benefits. We'll mention one in a second. Okay. So the first one, which is what we're really focusing on, which is the basar b'chalav, means there's three caveats to that rule to make some usher as basar b'chalav. Not just any milk and meat together. The first rule is as follows. It only applies if the meat portion of that basar b'chalav is either beef, lamb, or goats. And now, those don't have to have been slaughtered and be kosher like that you could eat it. It doesn't have to be, you know, shechted and salted, etc. like that. But it had to have come from those species of animals. So, again, beef, lamb, or goat. It doesn't apply to poultry, like chicken or turkey. They are usher. You're not allowed to eat them together with milk, but they're not usher b'hana. You are allowed to have benefit from them. And also, it doesn't apply to treif species like pork. So if this clam or pork or chicken or turkey that mixed together with milk together with cheese, that you can feed to your pet. There's nothing wrong with that. Excuse me. The second detail is just about every dairy product could create basar b'chalav. If you have the right meat, just about every dairy product can be, except with one exception, lactose. Lactose, this may be a drop more complicated, but lactose is only milchigs midrabanan. It's what we call meimi cholov. The way it gets taken out of the way means it has a lower status, so it is milchigs, and you can't eat it with meat, but not to the point that it would create a basar b'chalav that's also b'hanan. You are allowed to feed that to your animals if you want to, if there's lactose in there. And the last thing is, basar b'chalav only applies if the meat and milk, basar b'chalav only makes on the basar b'hanan if the basar b'chalav were cooked together. If they're just mixed together cold and they were never cooked together, then you're not allowed to eat that food, but the food is not usher to your pets. Okay, so what you need to do is, when a person's picking up pet food, they need to think about, does this pet food contain basar b'chalav? And they can, so you have to keep these three things in mind. Is it beef, goat, or lamb? Does it have a dairy product in it? And were they cooked together? So some people will read the ingredient labels and try to figure it out, or ask someone else who knows what they're doing to look at the ingredient label and see if they can make some sense out of it. It happens to be we give hashkacha to a company called Evangers that produces these kind of things. They're not kosher by any stretch, but they're kosher enough that they're not basar b'chalav and they're not chametz on Pesach, and you can feed it to your animals. Okay, another example of having enough from basar b'chalav, which again, not from eating it, but having a benefit from it, is you wouldn't be allowed to give a cheeseburger to someone who's not Jewish. If you have a cheeseburger, or for that matter, as Rabbi Schwartz said, if a person had a coupon that said, this entitles you to one free cheeseburger, and you give that to a coworker, or you give it to someone who you know who's not Jewish, that's considered having hanah. What's the hanah? The hanah is that if I give a present to somebody, that generates goodwill, and that goodwill is considered to be having, I'm having a benefit from the non-kosher food, and that's also to do with basar b'chalav. Now, the same thing, in this case we mentioned basar b'chalav, a more common example of having hanah is actually from stam yayin. Somehow I ended up with a bottle of non-kosher wine, and that bottle of non-kosher wine is, if you hold that stam yayin, is asur b'hanah, I would not be allowed to give that wine to someone else at work or to someone who I know who's not Jewish, because that's having hanah. As a little aside is, someone asked us, what happens if you had a coupon that said, you know, 50 cents off a burger, a cheeseburger? That Rabbi Schwartz thought was okay. He thought the benefit that you're having from that is so not tied to the basar b'chalav, he thought you could give that to a person who's not Jewish, that's not hanah. And last, before we close, is that there's another, something else that's very similar to basar b'chalav, which we could include within here, and has to do with preparing food in the kitchen, and that is that the Chachamim said we should not eat meat and fish that are cooked together. Basar b'chalav, of course, means milk and meat together. They said here also fish and meat should not be eaten together, because Chazal considered that to be dangerous to eat those two together. Whether it's still dangerous nowadays, it appears to not be dangerous anymore, but the assumption is that we still follow that restriction and do not eat milk and meat. We do not eat meat and fish that are together. Now, you don't need to wait. If the person eats meat, they can eat fish right away. If they eat fish, they can eat meat right away. But the Ramah says that the person should eat and drink something that's neither meat or fish in between. So what that means is, if a person has fish at the Shabbos table, then before they go ahead and start eating the challah, they should go ahead and eat some salad, have a piece of challah, and then drink something parah or something that's not meat and not fish, before they go on to the other one. It's from the fish to the meat, or the meat to the fish. Or the same thing comes up at a kiddush. There's sometimes at a kiddush they'll be serving, or a buffet, they'll be serving the same, serving meat and fish. So if people want to switch back and forth, Ramah says you should eat something and drink something in between. Okay, this isser to eat meat and fish together applies only if you either eat them at the same time, you put them into the same, into a sandwich, or you eat something, a meat that was cooked together with fish, or fish that was cooked together with meat. In other words, either you're eating them both at the same time, or they were cooked together, and now you're eating one of them. However, you are allowed to eat meat that was cooked in a fish pot, or more commonly, fish that was cooked in a meat pot. Even so, there are some people who have a minhag that they have a special fish pot that they never use it for meat. But really, by the strict letter of the law, you're really allowed to eat. You're allowed to make fish in a fleshed pot. Okay. One last part of this. This question about this din of that now you eat meat and fish together is that as a rule, when we have something, if something treif would fall into kosher food, or meat would fall into milk, we would say is that if there's a tiny amount, if the little bit that's in there is bata b'shishim, it's less than 1/60, then the din is that little bit that falls in is bata, and if it already happened, then you're allowed to eat the food afterwards. Okay? So the post can talk about what about if it wasn't treif that fell into kosher, but meat that fell into fish, or fish that fell into meat. Excuse me. Would that also make the food be would that also be able to be bottled? We once had an interesting scenario where somebody was making gefilte fish. They're making gefilte fish in fish balls, and by mistake they stuck one of their fish balls into the chicken soup that was cooked on the fire, instead of sticking it into the fish pot that they were cooking it. So in that kind of a case, would it be bottled or would it not be bottled? If it was only a small amount, could it be bottled b'shishim or could it not be bottled b'shishim? So some people hold it could be bottled b'shishim, because why not? If something treif could be bottled b'shishim, then surely fish could be bottled b'shishim. And others say that, no, since it's a question of safety, it's a question of danger. The Gemara considered it dangerous to have meat and fish together. For those rules of bittul b'shishim don't work. Even the tiniest amount of something that's dangerous is unacceptable. So it's a machlokes. And it would sound to be a very unusual machlokes. It doesn't seem to come up very often. I mean, I just said a story about a person who put fish into their chicken soup, but I mean, that doesn't really happen every day of the week. But it happens to be that it's quite relevant. The simplest cases, there are companies that put fish oil into all kinds of foods. They're trying to get omega-3 fatty acids into their foods, and they put fish oil. We've seen it in peanut butter and orange juice and bread, in all kinds of things people put it in. So they put in a tiny amount. It's always bata b'shishim in those cases. There's always small enough to be bata b'shishim. And if you're mako, as most are, most people are mako to say that if it's bata b'shishim, then you're allowed to eat it. Then you could eat, let's say you had bread that omega 3 in it, you could eat that with kokos. Okay. A little bit of a more complicated case is a sauce. I'll try to pronounce this. Worcestershire. But anyhow, you know what I'm trying to say. There's a certain kind of a sauce that's made with anchovies. Anchovies is a kind of fish. And the traditional way you make that food is you put in a lot of that fish. It ferments in a special, very slow process. And that fish, that sauce for sure should not be used with meat. That sauce, if it's made in that way, will be labeled with the word fish on it. It'll say, oh, you fish, or something like that. Excuse me. But there are lots of companies who are not nearly as patient. So they put in a tiny bit of anchovies just to make it seem authentic. You know, they want to have a certain amount of anchovies, but there's so little in there that those anchovies are a tiny amount, and it would be bata b'shishim. So if you're mako, as most are, then you could use that sauce, which is actually it's a steak sauce. You could use that on meat, and it's okay. That would be bata. Again, most people are mako about that. Some are not, and therefore some will mark those items as fish, even if it has a tiny amount. But most hashgachos would label that as parv, and most people would therefore eat it as parv and not consider it to be even fishy. They would eat it with meat. Okay, one last case, and this is, it's worth noting that the marshmallows, so to speak, real marshmallows are made with gelatin, and marshmallows that are truly kosher are made with one of two types of kosher gelatin. Either they're made with beef gelatin, and for reasons that are beyond this discussion today, one thing with kosher beef gelatin, truly kosher beef gelatin, are not flashings. For whatever reason, that's its own discussion. But some of them are made with kosher fish gelatin. And the ones that are made with kosher fish gelatin are usually the fish is not bata b'shishim in the marshmallow. The so much fish, especially once we consider that the volume of the fish rather than the weight of it, it's volume that we use in determining bittul. There's so much fish in there that it's not bata b'shishim, and those marshmallows should not be eaten with meat. I'm not sure exactly what kind of dish you would make with marshmallows and meat, but you should not eat those marshmallows with meat. If they're made with fish gelatin, it's usually in the ingredient panel, usually. Then, if it's made with fish, you should not eat that with meat, because those are considered to be fish marshmallows.